Pollock. Josh, congratulations on 1 year. Chris, it's really good to hear you tonight. My sobriety date is January 15th of 2014. So I picked up a chip last week, or whatever it was, 2 weeks ago. So I'm probably not going to pick up another chip. Just warning you guys so like you don't get weirded out when I like don't walk up. You know, I don't want it to be awkward. I called like 15 people to try to figure out who would speak for me tonight. Nobody said yes. And then finally I got a hold of Ricky. I'm just kidding. So I met Ricky about 8 years ago, maybe nine, at a men's retreat in Maryland where I got sober. And we became friends on Facebook and sort of kind of kept in touch, but not really. And then I came down here to visit before I moved down here, and I was walking over there, and Ricky was like, "Carl?" And we immediately became fast friends, and I moved in with Ricky shortly after that when I moved down here, and his house flooded during the hurricane last year, and I was like, "Fuck this, I'm moving out," and so I moved out, but I'm really excited to hear Ricky tonight, man. He's just a solid dude, solid guy in the recovery, somebody I look up to, and I really respect his program. So I'll give you Ricky.
I'm Ricky, I'm an alcoholic. I was gonna be really nice. And not say this about Carl, but now that he's dropping shade, he actually stole my story. You know, I was going to say that same exact story. And one of the things I love about AA is, like, if you come around and you get in the center, you're going to meet people, all over at conventions, retreats. And if you stick around, you'll run into those people again, because we all hang together. So Carl and I are a lot alike. I don't know if any of y'all follow him on Facebook, but he's all over the place. I think he's like a pilot. Like half the time he's here, half the time he's all over the world. So we have that in common. I'm grateful to be here tonight, actually. And I know why I'm supposed to be here right now. Because Tuesday... Well, first of all, my sobriety date is May the 5th, 2014. I have a sponsor. I have a home group in Safety Harbor. It's called the After Work Bunch. It meets every day at 5:30. Tuesdays and Fridays is probably the best time to go. Sponsor other men. I'm just a satisfied customer of Alcoholics Anonymous. Yeah. So on Tuesday morning, I was on this work trip, and I was actually supposed to work Thursday and Friday. I was supposed to do this trip, and I didn't really want to do it because I was going to miss this meeting and then also my home group on Friday, but I didn't want to drop it either because I didn't want to miss out on the pay, right? And so Tuesday morning, I'm finishing up my run. I'm on the treadmill and I'm like struggling with like, do I drop this? Like, what do I do? And I just started praying, and I thought about it. I was like, what would a guy do who really trusts God with his life? Like what would I do if I knew that God had my back? Right. I talked to my sponsor about it, and I was like, I'm going to drop this trip, right? Because I don't want to miss both of these meetings. So later that day, Carl texts me, and normally I need like a month to like block my schedule off if somebody asks me to speak or whatever. But I was like, yeah, absolutely, I'll be there, And it's like, in that moment, I knew why I wasn't supposed to be working. Yeah, God doesn't come to me with like a better trip or more money or whatever. He comes to me with an opportunity to be of service, and that's kind of how Alcoholics Anonymous has worked for me. I talked about being a satisfied customer of Alcoholics Anonymous. I can assure you when I got here on May the 5th of 2014 in this retirement community in Palm Coast, Florida, I was not feeling that way. You know, I honestly thought like, you know, my life was over. You know, I was never going to have fun anymore. Never get laid again. Like, you know, it's just going to be boring. And there's like everybody in there is like 65 and up, you know, and there was like no distractions in those groups, you know, and that was exactly what I needed, you know. That was like a blessing in disguise. You know, I remember I was like 4 years sober and I moved down to South Florida and these people were trying to get sober. I was like, man, I don't know if I could have got sober down here. There's way too many distractions. But anyways, I could just tell you a little bit. I want to talk a little bit about my story and then really talk about, you know, what it's like today. I could just tell you that I never felt like I fit in anywhere. You know, I grew up in Mississippi. My dad was white. My mother is from Honduras. Where I grew up, there wasn't a lot of Hispanic and people. And so, like, I just didn't fit in with the people I went to school with, you know. And every summer, we go down to Honduras for, like, 2 months. And, you know, it's been my summers with my mom's family. And, you know, I would try and speak Spanish with this, like, southern drawl, you know. And everybody be like, man, this boy ain't from around here, you know. And so I never fit in there either, you know. And my whole life, I just wanted to belong. I just wanted to fit in, right? And so the first time I drank, I was 13 years old, and I loved the effect that it produced, right? I just wanted more, you know. Now, I didn't know why at 13 that I wanted more. You know, I didn't know anything about this allergy or any of this stuff, you know. I just knew that, like, when I took a drink, like, everything just, like, disappeared. And for that moment or whatever, I just felt like I fit in, you know. And then I would drink more, and I'd get sick, and I'd swear, like, I'm never doing this again, right? And, like, I couldn't wait to sneak out again and drink, right? You know, fast forward into like high school, college, like I discovered some other substances, that, you know, I really enjoyed doing, and they helped me control my, my drinking, you know, you know, when I first got here, I thought I had a problem with drugs, right? And it turns out that, like, alcohol has always been my problem. I just use those substances to control my drinking, right? And so I always had this, work hard, party hard mentality, right? And, yeah, I would do a lot of stuff. I'd make some achievements, and then I'd always be celebrating, you know? And I'd later find out that I would use ambition to justify my alcoholism. You know, I would do all of these things over here and overperform, overachieve. And I'd be like, well, I can't be an alcoholic. Like, they live under bridges, you know, and that's just not me, right? So that's kind of the way I lived, right? And so for me, like, I graduate high school. I join the military. As soon as I'm in the military, like, I'm surrounded by people that are drinking hard, right? I go to college after that. I join a fraternity. Once again, I'm surrounded by people that drink really hard, right? And then eventually I graduate college. I end up getting a pilot slot in the military, and I go through Air Force pilot training. And once again, I'm surrounded by people that drink a lot, and it's like just encouraged and promoted. And it almost, if you don't drink like that, like, you're kind of like ostracized, you know? So to me, like, this just seemed like normal. This is just what we do, right? And, so eventually what ended up happening for me is, like, this other idea, this old idea that I had too, is like, we didn't have a lot of money growing up. So I just thought, like, if I could just be successful, make a lot of money, have all the things that, like, my friends have, that I could be happy like them too. And, what ended up happening for me is, you know, I ended up, finishing up pilot training, like, top of my class, and then after that, they started sending me overseas, and I'm flying this, like, big C-17, it's a big cargo plane, that turns into a hospital, and basically we're flying in and out of Afghanistan and medevacking all these people out. And and at this point in my career, you know, I started using substances. I was on a lot of prescription medications that they weren't actually prescribed to me. They were prescribed to other people, and, you know. But you can't take them. You can't be prescribed that and fly airplanes, you know. So I found a loophole. And so anyways, I'm doing a lot of these substances. I'm on this one substance that's, like, helping me stay alert and fly through the night, right? And then, like, if you take too much of that substance, like, you'll get muscle spasms and your back will really tense up. So I was on this other, you know, pain reliever, you know, to help me with that. And then at some point, you know, like, if you get that mixed up, you know, you take too much or something, like I might need something to help bring me down a little bit because I got to land the plane at some point, you know. And, like I was living my life like this, right? And it's funny now. But during that time when I was going through this, and this is the insane part about alcoholism, to me it was like, well, what's the big deal? Like, this is, I have to have this. If you want me to work, if you want me to fly your airplane, I gotta be on this. Yeah, or I'm not going. Yeah, that's like, I couldn't stop, you know. And the only reason I talk about this in my story is because, like, you can't smell prescription drugs on your breath like alcohol, and I was able to get away with it, right? So anyways, what ended up happening for me is I, every day of my life, this is going on. I'm like, I can't stop. Like, today is the day they're going to find out, you know, I'm a phony. They're going to bust me. They're going to throw me in jail. I'm going to lose everything, right? So, I ended up self-disclosing to my commander, and they sent me to treatment in 2011, January of 2011, which isn't my sobriety date. But I go to this 28-day program, and, you know, it's the first time I was ever introduced to Alcoholics Anonymous, right? And I remember getting there, and there's, like, homeless people there. There's, like, people from all walks of life, right? And, like, for the first time in my life, I felt like I fit in. Right? And I remember thinking, man, I am so glad I got here before I lost everything, yeah? And like some of these other people, right? And so anyways, I leave this treatment facility after 28 days, and, you know, I got this self-knowledge about alcoholism, you know, like, this is going to keep me sober. And, yeah, I eventually got some news. I was misdiagnosed in treatment. That misdiagnosis ended up ending my flying career. And for me, like, I was like 3 or 4 months out of treatment. And, yeah, they told me I'd never fly again. And that's all I ever wanted to do since I was a little kid. My identity was wrapped up in that. And so I was like, well, what's the point of staying sober? You know, and I didn't understand the first step, right? And so for I ended up picking up. And for the next 2.5 years, I would trade everything of value for my next drink or drug. And, you know, I ended up in this place where, like, you know, I lost everything. Well, I didn't lose it. I sold it all. Yeah, I sold it all for my next drink or drug, right? And ended up being homeless. And I remember, like, the last 6 days I was drinking and using, like, every time I drank, every time I used, I just wanted to die. Like, I didn't know, like, what's wrong with me. Why can I not stop, you know? And on May the 3rd of 2014, I said this prayer. And at this point in my life, I don't even believe in God, but I said this prayer. And it went just like this. It's like, God, if there is a God, I need help. And if you give me a sign, I'll go back into Alcoholics Anonymous. I'll get a sponsor. I'll do whatever those people say. But I need a sign. And so on May the 4th, of 2014, I'm in Publix, and out of all the people that I could have ran into, I ran into this guy who had tried to sponsor me 2.5 years prior when I had just gotten out of treatment. And I knew right then, like, my step 1, 2, and 3 happened right then in that moment. And I remember talking to this guy and telling him, you know, I was like, man, you're never gonna believe what prayer I said last night. And he's like, oh yeah, tell me. And so, yeah, then he has, like, this little pocket big book, you know, on him. I'm like, what a loser. Yeah, he carries a pocket Bigfoot in the grocery store. I'm like, what are you trying to pick up chicks in here? Yeah. And so anyways, at that point, man, I don't believe in God. Or I turned my will and my life over to this duty, right? And I told, I'm like, May the 5th is my sobriety date of 2014. And I've been sober ever since. And me and this man, we began to walk through the steps. And what I can tell you is, I went through the steps with this man to the best of my ability at that time in my life. You know, you don't have to do this stuff perfect. You just have to do it, you know. And so we go through 1 through 11, right? And at like 4 months sober, you know, I start feeling better, you know. And I got this great idea that if you're new in here, you probably never thought of this, so I'm going to give it to you. It's a new idea that nobody's ever thought of. And it's like, hey, you know, now that I'm sober, I want to recreate a successful version of myself in sobriety. And I know exactly what I need to do. Like, I need to get in shape, right? So I get the girl. I need some money, right? I need to make some money, and I need to get back all the things, right? And if I can just make the outside look good, then you'll think I'm good, and I'll be good. You know, I'll be okay, right? So at 4 months sober, I began to go to the gym 3 hours a day, and I take another job. Like at this time, I'm waiting tables at Olive Garden, you know, and I get another waiting job, like, and I'm working like 12 hours a day, right? And I'm still going to AA because I'm really smart. I know not to, like, not go to a meeting, right? So I'm going to, like, 3 meetings a week. I'm the last person to get there, the first person to leave. You know, I'm just shoplifting recovery. Just take, you know? And so during this time, there's this group of guys that I ended up meeting in Palm Coast. And they were, like, on fire about AA. You know, and I was like, man, what is with these people? Why are they so fanatical about this stuff? You know, and they were taking meetings into prisons and detoxes and going on these men's retreats. And, you know, and they kept inviting me to go with them. And I would be like, yeah, that sounds like a great idea. And I'm going to come, but I got to get some stuff in order and then I'll come find you guys, you know. And they would just laugh at me. They would laugh at me and then they would invite me again. You know, they kept inviting me. And so, anyways, I'm like 10 months sober, and I'm restless, irritable, and discontent, and I don't even know what that is. Like, I thought, like, hey, if I just quit drinking, like, my life will get better. But the truth is, for a guy like me, when I stop drinking, if that's all I do, like, my life actually gets worse. You know, and I'm like running around like a chicken with his head cut off, you know, just trying to scratch that itch, you know. So anyways, I'm 10 months sober and I'm running down the road at like 6 o'clock in the morning and like being in the best shape of my life. That's my top priority, blah, 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 you know. And so I'm running down the road and out of nowhere, I get hit by this bus, right? And I am not making this stuff up. So I get hit by the school bus, right? I hit the ground and I can't breathe. I thought I was dying. And what happened for me in that moment was, I realized how precious life is. You know, every day I woke up, people would invite me to do stuff. I'm like, yeah, tomorrow, you know, as if tomorrow's promised. Like, I just thought tomorrow was going to come. And in that moment, I realized, like, it could all end today, you know. And so anyways, they rushed me to the hospital. I'm in the hospital for like 5 days, and when it's time to leave, like, my sternum's fractured, my ribs are fractured, I had some bulging disc in my lower back, and when it's time to leave, the doctor tried to send me home with pain meds, and I don't know where this came from, but I was like, man, I can't take those as prescribed, and I'd rather be in the pain that I'm in right now than the pain of getting sober again. And I don't know where that came from. You know, it's God doing for me what I couldn't do for myself. And so now I'm out of the hospital. I can't work. I can't work out. I'm not going to use. And the only thing that was left to do was, like, pick up this simple spiritual toolkit that had been laid at my feet. And so I began to do, I began to go to meetings every day. I began to do Alcoholics Anonymous, alcoholically. You know, like I went all in, right? And, you know, after about 3 weeks of doing this, going into prisons, going into detoxes, and I remember I was in Flagler County Jail after about the three-week mark, and I'm in the middle of this meeting, and all of a sudden I have this oversense of peace come over me, right? And at this time in my life, I'm, you know, 30 years old, living with my mom and brother, paycheck to paycheck, very single, driving a beater, and for the first time in my life, I was okay with that, because I was sober, and, like, I didn't know that that was possible. I always thought I had to wait to be okay. Like, once I get here, I'll be okay. I get there, and I was like, no, it's not here, it's over there, you know, and I spent my whole life doing that, and in that moment, I realized, like, wow, man, like, if I put all my energy into, you know, doing this, you know, I'll be okay, right? This is, like, what makes me happy is, like, the worst things that ever happened to me, I'm in this jail telling these people about it, and that's, like, how I was qualified for that position, right? And, you know, the worst things that ever happened to me ended up being my greatest assets, right? And I discovered that in that moment. And from that moment on, I decided, like, I have to build my life around the things that make me okay, you know. And I had to get in the center of Alcoholics Anonymous. And to this day, I still make my decisions based off of, like, how is this going to affect my recovery? Like, what does this look like for me? If I take this promotion and I have to move here, even though it pays more, what does the recovery look like there? You know, do I have any connections there? You know, I try and run it through that, you know, because this is the one thing that truly makes me okay. And if I try and put anything in its place, I'm just restless, irritable, and discontent, you know, and it just doesn't work for me. And, you know, the last thing I'll share is you would think that a guy like me that got hit by a bus would remember that. You know, every day, like, oh man, it could end tomorrow, you know, but I don't, you know, I have alcoholism, and I forget, you know, I forget, like, all the miracles, you know, that God has done in my life. Today, you know, I'm back in my industry, that I was told I would never do again, and when I got sober, it was not about getting my job back, it wasn't about a girl, it wasn't about any, it was about, like, hey, if I don't learn how to be sober, I'm screwed. You know, and as a result of doing these things, like, God has given me, you know, this life beyond my wildest dreams. And, you know, it's not so much, like, the job and, like, the things or whatever. It's the relationships, you know. It's the relationships that you build here in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I have friends that aren't alcoholics, just a few, like two or three, maybe four. And then when I start talking about my life, they're like, man, Ricky, I wish I was an alcoholic. And I'm like, come on. You know? You know, and it's like, how did I get here? Like, you know what I mean? Like I found the best thing ever. I have friends that aren't alcoholics that want to come hang out with us because we're having so much fun, you know? And so if you're new, you know, just keep coming back. Find the people that are in the center and just do what they do, you know? And you might have to get hit by a bus too. I don't know. You know what I mean? Like, that's how hard-headed I was, but I'm so grateful that it happened because I wouldn't be here today if it didn't. So thanks.
Thank you. Congratulations to you and Holly.